in library science degree from UBC, and he's worked in medical clinical research previously. Kevin Lindstrom is a science and engineering librarian, also here at University of British Columbia, and has a BSc in physical geography from University of Alberta and a master's from University of Western Ontario. I think are you both going to be speaking? Or?
Yes, you'll share it.
Okay, so I'll hand over to you.
You stole my joke about Kevin and I compete for the shortest commute for this conference. We both live on campus, so if we run, it takes us like, 6 minutes. If you walk, it's 12 minutes. So welcome to UBC, those of you who haven't been. This session is, I have to open it first, sorry. This session will take us to not necessarily super high-tech environment. We are going to talk about podcasts. We're going to talk about what we do in science and engineering library with this piece of technology called podcast. And by the way, we are podcasting this session right away. If you have no objections, by the way, to us podcasting this session, if you do, let us know. We will not put it online. What we're going to talk today is outlined on this slide. We're going to talk about what is podcasting. We're going to talk about why we decided to podcast. It's not necessarily our primary thing in science and engineering library to podcast. Why would we do that? We're going to talk about how we do it, to show you the technicalities of it. We are going to show you our own podcasting 101, what we think is important for podcasting. We are going to show you how much it costs, and it costs almost nothing. We are going to show you where we host podcasts. Those are big files, where we keep them, how we keep them, how we maintain them. And we are going to talk about our next steps. And, you know, we can have this session as a dynamic session as well. If you have any questions, just jump in, and Kevin and I will do our best to answer them. All of you know what this podcasting is, most probably, but let me just highlight it once again for you. So podcasting, usually the definition from New England, New Oxford, American Dictionary, is a digital recording typically made available on the web for downloading on a personal audio player. Right, so you have a file online, you download it to your player, and it becomes a podcast. Usually, podcasts are digital file can be downloaded and by person and listen to you from wherever by whoever. Originally, podcasting referred to a file who lives on RSS feed, which means instead of a person going to a specific website, New York Times, and getting this content, RSS feed will bring this new content for this person. So a person needs to subscribe to this podcast, and every single new file will be downloaded to their reader or any RSS reader. However, recently, podcasting starts to be referred as anything that can, any audio files that can live online, any audio files that people can go and download. Just in the common language, everything is now, every audio file that lives online is now called podcast somehow, which is fair enough. Statistics, we all like statistics. Not that many statistics, by the way, about podcasting. 4 years ago, in the digital age, it's like a century ago, a Pew survey found that 20% of people are using podcasts. 20%, not that much. eMarketer, which is a major surveying company in business world, found in 2007 that around 19 million people are using podcasts, but the potential to grow for this podcast is 65 million by 2012. Research in academia shows that around 70% of undergrads in 2007, which is about half a century ago in digital age, are using have iPod or MP3 players, which means they might use podcasts. My sense right now is that almost everyone, if you walk outside and ask those guys in the learning commons if you have iPod, iPhone, anything that plays podcasts, they will say yes. By the way, how many of you have audio devices that can play MP3 right now in the audience? There we go. And you came to this session, right? You know everything. You should be talking. So why podcasting ourselves? So we are one of the largest academic libraries in Canada. Hopefully there's nobody from U of A who can say that they are the second largest university in Canada, but we're competing with those guys. We have very strong faculty of science, a very strong faculty of applied science in UBC. In fact, ISI data shows our faculty of science is one of the most powerful in the world. something to think about. The departments, we are a small library. We have three librarians, you know, that are in our unit. Kevin, I, and Alicia is our boss. We serve around 10,000 people. So grad, undergrads, and faculty. Lots of people. Lots of faculties. Those faculties produce every year hundreds and hundreds of talks. Talks that are lost right away after they're finished. So if somebody comes to, they bring an expert from Microsoft, they bring an expert from another university, they come to talk like that in this setting, they finish the talk, and it's gone. The content is not preserved anywhere. The content is not recorded anywhere. It's just gone. They might keep the PowerPoint of this presentation, but they don't even put it on their website. It's just gone. So we always felt that it's too bad. We could potentially preserve this information because being librarians, we always want to preserve stuff. We want to preserve and keep it for the next generations if they want to see it. So we felt that we really want to do something about it. So as a trial, we decided to offer a pilot to one of our departments, we will show it next slide, to preserve some of those talks as podcasts. So we promised to this department, which is physics and astronomy, we will capture this content, we will come to your presentation, we will capture the content, we'll do everything for you. We'll capture the content, we will take it, put it in our institutional repository, we'll maintain it forever. The only thing you have to do is to agree. So why do we do that? We have two false outreach purpose. First of all, we want the world to know what happens in UBC. We are a big institution, we are powerhouse in this province, we are the institution in this province, so we want people to know what's going on. But also, by being librarians working with our units, we have liaison responsibilities. Kevin is responsible for 10 departments, I'm responsible for 9 departments, and Alicia is responsible for 6 departments, something like that. We want to know what's going on in this department. So the podcasting is also a liaison tool for us. We also involve ourselves in what the departments are about, what they're talking about, what the research is about. So it's we really want to capture those unique presentations to get to know our departments better as well. So we started with Department of Physics and Astronomy, one of the biggest departments in UBC. We offer them that we will do everything, as I said. We will just come to a presentation, and we will eventually get the final result on the web. They said, sure, why not? Like, as less we need to do, the better. And so we went to those departments for, 20 months now? I will talk about selecting those podcasts. We don't record everything, because there's too much going on as well. But we take those presentations, I will be showing what we do with them. So it's our take about podcasting. What's important for us, for our podcasting, is first of all, we have to find appropriate content. There are lots of talks about physics or astronomy, but who cares? So we really want to capture the cool thing about physics and astronomy, the unique thing about physics and astronomy. So we go after stuff like measuring the universe, dwarf stars, dark matter, something that people, physics of music, something that might be of interest to more people than just the hardcore physicists. And it worked well for us. We subscribe to department listservs. We know what's going on in those departments. Kevin is subscribed to all them. He knows what sessions are going to take place. We contact the speakers. We ask them, would you mind if you record your session and put it online for free for anybody to see? And most of them say, sure, but and never follow up. But some of them do say yes, and I can sign the waiver form, which is the major thing, because we keep the copyright with the physicists. We never take the copyright away from them, but we have to sign them the waiver form, which is pretty simple, 2 lines form, in which we promise people that we will move the format for these files from one format to another if needed. Let's say MP3 goes out of fashion and we need to move those files to any other format, so we will do it for them. So hence, we have to sign those people. So finding appropriate content is very important. But also, we need to find hardware and software. So we are in libraries. Libraries are pretty cheap. We don't have much money for this kind of stuff. We have lots of money for databases, right? But we don't have lots of money to buy mics. So what we do, we went for the cheapest solution. Cheapest solution for us was Audacity, piece of software that you can download for free, runs on every PC, Mac, or even on a USB stick. So if you don't, if your computers are locked, you can download Rust on a USB stick and run it from a USB stick. It's not, it's pretty easy to do. You have a USB mic, not fancy, $70 in Tom Lee. You can buy it any music store. It runs for it will cost you from $50 to $90. It's pretty cheap, and this is all our costs and our time. So what we do, we record this presentation, we put it in Circle. Circle is our institutional repository. So many of you work in big institutions or small institutions, you have your own institutional repository. We decided to host our podcast in this institutional repository. We also put it on iTunes U. UBC is a bit slow institution. We are very cautious about things. So we are exploring iTunes U. We don't have a huge presence like other universities have. We have a tiny iTunes U presence where most of the content is our content, our library content. So physics podcasts, really. Okay. The next step is, again, it's for the techies of you. We record those audio files as MP3, but then they become audio files online. So what do? To become podcasts, we need to stream them using RSS feeds. And we go after the cheapest and easiest solution. We use our own blog to stream those files. We just point to those files on our blog and become streamed. And people can subscribe to them, and those files will be downloaded to their machines or whatever they're using. Another way, of course, just to put those files somewhere on a website, your department website, or in our case, in our institutional repository, and not allowing people to subscribe, then they will just go to this file, download it. Right now, our institutional repository is not improving. So right now, people cannot stream files. They have to download the entire thing. Like, our file is going to be 60 megs. It's 1 meg per minute, more or less, per MP3 recording. So they need to download the entire thing. But I think next month we'll have streaming capabilities. We'll be able to stream files. People don't have to download the entire thing. Promoting our podcast is an interesting idea. So how do we promote? The only way we promote is word of mouth. We ask people to tell other people that we have this beautiful, wonderful podcasts. We have it on our website, our own branch website, not the UBC library website, because we are branch system. We have around many, 20 different websites, sub-websites on our website. So we put it on our own website, people can see and view. However, we noticed that faculty and students are the best promoters. So faculty, once they like something, they will tell other people. And hence, we got more invitations to get those podcasts done. So evaluating podcasts is very, very important. So again, we are a unit of 3 people. So what we learned is not to promise too much. Don't say yes to everybody who wants to podcast, because you won't be able to do it for us. And we cannot stretch ourselves too soon as well. So we still stay with our pilot, which is Department of Physics and Astronomy. And we cannot expand, because the demand is big. We have more requests for podcasts, and we cannot do more than that. So we use statistics to measure our podcasts. Those are specific podcasts. I will give you one title. The Bright Future of Dark Matter and Dark Energy Searches. So we are not expecting thousands and thousands of downloads every month. So we are talking about, so far, those podcasts were downloaded like 300 times, 200 times, but very specific audiences. But this is the thing. Like, we try to specialize in this area. We specialize in one department and want to see how it goes. But it goes well. People can find those podcasts on Google now, because once a week our institutional repository is harvested by Google and Open Archives initiatives, and they can find those podcasts. Hence, they can download them quickly, and hence they can listen to them if they want to. I've never listened to those myself. Another one. 5 years data from a telescope. Let's taste inflation. Okay. 200 times downloads. I will switch here to Kevin, who will continue presenting this topic and will tell us about typical podcasts and so on.
Okay. Well, compared to Eugene, I do get a kick out of a podcasting physics topics, and I just looking at some of the things we've done. There's something called the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Project, and it's basically looking at microwave background information, how the universe is expanding. And one of our guys, Mark Halpern, who's a physicist here in UBC, is one of the key researchers in a group, which is a very international group. What's also nice about the physics department and doing physics podcasts is I can actually see the building from here. So it's very close, very easy to get across from our offices, which are upstairs, over to the physics building. But I wanted to talk about how we do our presentations. What we do is we take our mic, we go take our laptop, and much as we have it here, we go into the lecture theater and we set it up. And sometimes the professor, you know, they kind of look at us, what are you doing here? I say, oh yeah, I'm recording your presentation. They say, okay. And then we get them to sign the paperwork to let us archive it and put it on the institutional repository. But the typical podcast is very much like a lecture. So if you remember your undergraduate or your graduate days, and faculty or the professor would start in, and they'd sort of, you know, they'd start off in a reasonable pace, and they'd stick to their schedule, and then they'd sort of start to realize that they'd run out of time, or else, like a lot of professors, they go on the slides, and they kind of get lost in their thoughts, and then they come back to the slides. Well, our podcasts are very much like that. They are not professional presentations. They are not pre-rehearsed. They are reality. So sometimes you'll hear people talk, you know, they skip ahead and let's go back to that slide. So what you would have to do is listen to the audio and then at the same time listen, follow along with the PowerPoint or the PDF as well. And sometimes it works really well. It's a really nice, they've got it down pat. They've given this presentation a million times. So they know they got 50 minutes and they know how to pace it. But a lot of times, the narrative is very nonlinear. Earlier this year, we had American Physical Society, Northwest Section, had their annual meeting here, and we had a number of people giving presentations, and it was very much like that. What's also nice is that our podcasts also capture questions from the audience, of course, because we want to get it all. Sometimes the questions from the audience are some of the most interesting things about the whole presentation. Some of them, you know, depending on your interests, can be quite interesting or less interesting. A lot of them also have some historical relevance because, you know, some time ago we had something called the Vogue Symposium, and it was one of the few times that we actually had three Nobel Prize winners in physics on campus at the same time. Some of you come from other universities like Harvard, MIT, Caltech, where that happens more often. Here at UBC, it's a pretty unique thing, and we were able to capture that. So what we're also doing now is we're capturing these as MP3 files, and what we do is once the podcast is complete, we convert them to an MP3 file, and then we upload them onto Circle. And Circle is our repository, just circle.ubc.ca, and that's where we keep things. Now, Eugene mentioned that as this drowns right now with our current version of DSpace, streaming is not available, but we are actively upgrading our DSpace software. We've hired a company out of Belgium, atmire.com, to upgrade our DSpace software, so we'll have streaming capabilities for both video and audio files, which will be really nice. And so instead of having to download this entire presentation, you can hear it as a streaming audio. There are also other options in terms of archiving your files. You have other things like, you know, library websites, departmental websites, things like iTunes, and then there's also various fee for storage options like box.net and omni.drive. Future directions. Something I'd like to say about future directions is that depending on how many people we can get involved with this. I mean, ideally, it'd be nice if we could get people from the various departments involved. So rather than, you know, myself having to go over to physics to record these things, someone over there could do it because obviously it's very straightforward. Laptop, switch on the mic, and away you go. And all you have to do is convert it to an MP3 file. It'd be really nice to have more and more of these presentations archived for us, so we don't have to actually be there ourselves. Although there is some value in that, because I remember the first time I did this for the Department of Physics, people said, "Are you going to be archiving every physics workshop or every lecture series?" I said, "Well, you know, in an ideal world, yes, it would be really nice if we could do that, but unfortunately, we can't." And some faculty are very open to us capturing or recording the presentations, others are less so. What's really nice, though, is that people actually see you in the lecture theaters and say, hey, this is something totally different from the library. You know, we get all the, you know, American Physical Society journals and APS and AIP, and, you know, we have archive.org, and there's a few ebooks free access, but all in all, you know, people in physics and astronomy are pretty well served in terms of the resources they already have access to, both the, you know, preprint servers and all the current journals that we have. So for us to offer something totally new, like podcasts, is like, oh wow, there's something that there's the library's doing something different. They see you out there, they see your face, and they start to realize that you know, librarians are more than just how many minutes?
One.
Oh, one. I'm sorry. So yeah, that kind of rolls into the thing once about the new skill set for librarians. I mean, Eugene has been doing some podcasts for a long time as part of another position he was involved with as physiotherapy librarian. So Eugene had the know-how, the skill set to do podcasts, and then we just kind of expanded it, you know, with Alicia's support to record physics podcasts from the presentations and lectures from the physics department. It's a new skill set. Podcasting takes time and energy. There's been lots of workshops, or lots of presentations I wish I could have been to. For example, Carl Wieman. Carl Wieman is a Nobel Prize winner from University of UC Colorado Boulder, and he's basically come to UBC to revamp the way science is taught here at UBC. And they've had quite a number of lectures, quite a number of presentations, and it would have been really nice to capture this content, because teaching science is a big thing, not just here, teaching science in a new way is not just an important thing here at UBC, but for universities, you know, across North America, you know, around the world. So it would have been really nice to have that content on our server. We're also looking at, in, you know, long term, you know, recording more video, archiving of video, that type of thing. Where are we here? So, and the long and the short of it is, you know, we're really hoping that, you know, podcasting might increase, you know, student satisfaction, instructional flexibility. We are very early into this, so we'll have to see all this works out. But like I say, so far, our podcasting initiative has been a real benefit between our library and the physics department, and internationally as well, because one of our real champions in the physics department, she says, well, I let people at other universities know that these presentations are available online. They check them out. You know, they get a sense to listen to a presentation by a Nobel Prize winner. So it's a real opportunity for people from around the world to listen to these presentations. And it's a benefit for us because it shows the Department of Physics, amongst other departments, as to how the library can support their research. And it makes us look good because we're doing something new and innovative. So we're really hoping that this podcasting initiative, this phenomenon, will grow, and hopefully we'll be able to take part of it as best we can, and with the resources that we have here at UBC. We also have some references, and I think they'll be available online from the M Libraries website that you can check out. And any questions?
Mm-hmm. Do you folks put any intro and outro to the series?
There ain't no polishing.
No,
they do.
So how do you introduce, like, you know, this week's lecture is going to be on blah, 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 or do you just let them start talking?
We let them start talking, and they do the intro, and they do the wrap-up. We just basically put ourselves there, capture it, and go from there.
Okay.
So it's very low-tech. The high-tech part of it is probably converting it into an MP3 file and then uploading it onto Circle, but it's... There's no.
What's the cheapest way to do it? Yeah. Cheapest, fastest, easiest, and the laziest.
I mean, perhaps down the road it might be nice to, you know, maybe take video, but that's a whole other, you know, a whole other skill set, because you don't really want a camera just sitting there. You want to make it a bit. You know, I've seen a lot of podcasts, and a lot of them put me to sleep. So it'd be kind of nice, you know, to have. You know, if you're going to do, you know, a video, make it at least halfway professional looking, you know?
Mm-hmm. One more quick question. One really fast. So you said that you
No.
We did not. We asked them. They're going to the coding session. They have no objections.
You tell them.
Yeah.
Okay. And then my other question maybe is, so you had described a situation where maybe they have to be listening to a podcast, looking through a PowerPoint. How do you connect those two?
We upload the PowerPoint. So when you go to our DSpace link, you'll see the MP3 file link, and you'll see the link to the PowerPoint or to the PDF. We often try to
convert
the PowerPoints into PDFs.
So you're getting that from it.
Exactly.
We won't have time anyway. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are more public affairs where they self-produce podcasts themselves.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.